It is still 93 degrees, steamy degrees here at 708 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock, along with studio coordinator Jonathan Lowe. Really interesting stuff here for the next couple hours of the show. We are going to be talking with Gary Glass, who's the director of the American Home Brewers Association. This has just exploded. People are just, you know, starting up, you know, home brewing operations. They're getting serious about it. There's actually a huge convention here next weekend that focuses exactly and specifically on home brewing. And then in the bottom of the hour, we're going to chat with a woman who I've known for a number of years. Cheryl Hill lost her 16-year-old son, Tyler, more than 10 years ago. He was on a trip to Japan. He was only 16 years old. It was a youth group trip. And since then, Cheryl Hill has devoted her life to really talking about travel safety, what you need to know, what kids should know, what parents should know. And she's founded a new website, and it's got all kinds of information on it, what you should know, the checklist. She's even got a test for you that you can download. It's really informative stuff. I mean, in this day and age, more and more kids especially are going away, spending that semester abroad, which is so fabulous. You know, when I was back in college, which was, again, a long time ago, a few people did it, but now almost everyone does it. And then also people just travel. And she really has some important information about the kinds of things you need to know. For example, 911 is the number we call if there's an emergency here. Would you know what the number is in the UK or Japan or France or even Jamaica? All of those things are things that you really need to think about, and she's got all of that on her website. And I think she's really an important person, especially in this day and age, to talk to. And then at 8 o'clock, oh my gosh, I can't wait to talk to Dave Schultz. There is just a plethora of things to talk about with Professor Schultz. It looks like Jeff Sessions will be testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee. There are extraordinary polls out that show this incredible divide amongst Trump supporters and Republicans and Democrats on who they believe, Comey versus Trump. So much going on. And obviously, Dave Schultz, with the constitutional law background, is absolutely a key person to talk to. But first, let's talk beer. I think we need to talk something fun here. Beer. Let's talk with Gary Glass. He is the director of the American Home Brewers Association, and thousands of home brewers will be gathering at the convention center next weekend for Homebrew Con 2017. Gary, thanks for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, so Gary, what? First of all, tell us about this convention, because it sounds like it's going to be. If you're going to go to a convention, why not go to a convention with a lot of other home brewers?
Yeah, there's really nothing else like it. It is the world's largest gathering of home brewers. We're currently at about 2,400 that are planning on attending. We'll probably push 2,500 before the end of the week. There's really nothing else like it in terms of
so there's still
for homebrewers. Yeah,
no, can people still register?
Yes, absolutely. We have not sold out yet, so you can register via the conference website homebrewcon.org or register on site.
So Homebrew Con is what you're supposed to look up. Let me ask you, what is, when I think of a home brewer, I think of somebody who's literally in their basement, you know, brewing beer. Is that still the case today, or has it gotten a lot more sophisticated?
Well, you know, it varies. I tend to brew out on my back patio, but other people brew in their garage or on their stovetop or in their basement.
And in terms of, you know, where this has sort of taken off, I mean, how much bigger is this now than it was maybe even 5-10 years ago?
Well, we estimate that there are at least 1.2 million homebrewers in the United States, which is about 1 in 200 adults. So it's really exploded. And you know, going back 10 years or so ago, it wouldn't have even been half that. So
okay.
Lots of growth.
All right, and let me ask you something. If I wanted to start home brewing in my basement, is there any kind of law, or do I have to get a license? I mean, or does it vary, you know, by municipality or by state?
No, it is legal in all 50 states to brew beer at home, and you do not need a license, or you don't have to pay any taxes, you don't have to register or anything along those lines. So you're free to brew it at home, as long as you're not selling it.
I was going to say, I bet that changes if you decide to sell your home beer, but there's no restrictions or licensing in terms of if I just want to start brewing my own beer and have people over and serve them my beer, there's nothing that prohibits me from doing that.
No.
Okay. And in terms of the varieties of beer, I feel it's, you know, in terms of the brew pubs and breweries, there's such a diversity and such an explosion of different kinds of beer and different kinds of, you know, approaches. Is that true with the home brewing scene too?
Yes. Well, even more so. The reason why there's so many different beers available in the United States, that there's better beer selection in terms of different styles in the United States than any other country in the world. And that is direct reflection on the homebrewing community we have. Just homebrewers, you know, since they're not selling their beer, are free to experiment. I mean, you're making 5 gallons at a time, so if things don't turn out that great, that's perfectly okay. It's not like you've lost a lot of money or anything like that. But
that's an interesting point. I mean, because any hobby is going to cost some money. How much? Let's say I want to start up and brew 5 gallons. How much would I need? How much is like the basic equipment costs? Is there a beginning line of equipment, or is it going to get pretty expensive and sophisticated? I mean, how much does it cost to just get in at the basic level?
For a 5 gallon kit, it's probably going to start somewhere around $80 to $150. You can actually start on a much smaller scale. There are 1 gallon kits out there. That are going to cost you maybe $50 at most. And that's a really great way to get started because, it's not going to take up much space. You can kind of get the basics down and then decide if you want to scale it up from there.
Okay. And then how long, this is something that is completely out of my wheelhouse. How long does it take to actually, from start to finish, to brew beer? Is it days or weeks?
The process of brewing itself is a matter of hours. So for beginner brewers that are using extracts, it can take as little as 2 hours for the brewing process. Fermentation process does take a little bit more time. So they're looking at probably a week and a half, 2 weeks of fermentation, and then packaging it in bottles, and it's probably going to be another 2 to 3 weeks before the beer is ready to serve. So about a month from when you brew to when you're actually enjoying the beer.
Okay. And is there, are there any sort of storage? I mean, do you need a certain cooler type, a certain temperature, refrigerator to store it in? Or?
The nice thing about homebrewing and what's happened with craft beer since then is that ales have become very popular. And ales actually ferment at room temperature.
Oh, okay.
You really don't need any special equipment. And then once you've bottled the beer, then it can go into a refrigerator.
Okay. And let me ask you something. Is there a lot of home brewing of ciders?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, cider has become quite popular, and it's really actually fairly easy to do as well. Actually, easier than making beer if you're starting out with apple juice.
Okay, and is that something that you will focus on at all, or is this at Homebrew Con, the convention next year?
We actually do have a talk on cider. We have several talks on making mead, which is honey wine. The Twin Cities area is actually a kind of a hotbed of mead makers. Higher concentration of mead makers of the year than any other place in the United States.
And when you say mead, I guess I'm thinking of my oh my gosh, the books I read in middle school having to do with the Middle Ages.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's honey wine. So you're mixing honey with water and fermenting it, but you can also add in whatever kind of fruits or spices that you want. And the skill level of the mead makers in the Twin Cities is hard to match.
Really? And is it in fact the same thing that was, you read about in sort of Shakespeare and sort of the olden days?
Essentially it is. In fact, mead is probably the oldest fermented beverage. But it's also come a long ways, and the process of making it has been modernized quite a bit. That's reduced the fermentation time and the aging process to where you can turn out a very good mead in a fairly short period of time.
We're chatting with Gary Glass. He's the director of the American Home Brewers Association, and thousands of home brewers will be gathering at the convention center next week. And it actually starts on Thursday, right, Gary?
That's right. Yeah, June 15th through the 17th.
It's called Homebrew Con 2017, and you can still register. And is the how much is the registration?
Well, it's around $270.
Okay, and do you get to sample a lot of beers? I would think so.
There will be thousands of different beers that are served over the course of the event, both homebrew and commercially made craft beer, as well as meads and ciders, But there's also an educational aspect to it. So it's not just about drinking. We do limit sample sizes. In terms of the variety of different beers you can taste, there's probably no other place other than Club Night, which takes place Friday night, where we have almost 50 different homebrew clubs from all over the country that are going to be serving their beers. You'll never find a more eclectic selection of beers to sample anywhere else in the world.
But there will also, it sounds like, be classes on how you can become a better home brewer.
That's right. Yeah, we have 55 different seminars covering all aspects of the brewing process, beer styles, improving your brewing, mead, cider, even other fermentables. We cover it all.
And what are some of the other fermentables?
Well, we've got, I think, one on things like kombucha.
The health food store that's on the Skyway has that. Is that considered alcoholic?
Well, it actually starts with alcohol in it, and then the culture that you use to make kombucha sour consumes alcohol and produces acetic acid. So it actually starts out alcoholic and then reduces the alcohol through this.
I don't want to bust anybody, but they were handing out samples in the Skyway, and it was kind of fresh and light and a little sparkly. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. Again, it's the Homebrew Con, and it's next Thursday, right? It goes from next Thursday through Sunday?
Right, through Saturday.
Or through Saturday, okay. And so if you look up Homebrew Con, C-O-N, you can see how to register, what kinds of, information and classes and, situations you can learn about. Very interesting stuff. Good luck and have a lot of fun here, Gary.
Oh, thank you so much, Arthur.
Okay. All right, folks. Sounds very interesting. Yeah, the kombucha, they were, as I said, handing out the little samples, and it was very, it didn't taste at all alcoholic, although he's saying it starts out alcoholic and then it somehow becomes less alcoholic. I don't know. This is not my area of expertise at all, but it was very good. And then the ciders, I'm not a big beer person, but a cider is just, the hard ciders, it gets me so refreshing. I actually had it over at the St. Paul Saints Stadium. They have a little sort of sampler place where they're selling home, Minnesota brewed beers. And I was like, and then they had the ciders. And it's just so refreshing and delicious.
Let's take a break, and I'll help to educate you a little bit on cider.
Oh, cider. Okay. All right, folks. We're going to take a break. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. It's 7:26 in the Twin Cities, 92 degrees, still steamy out there. And Jonathan Lowe and I are talking cider. And you are a big cider fan. I was just saying how much I liked it. I'm less of a beer person, and the few times I've had it, I thought this is so refreshing and so great.
Ciders, and keep in mind, there's two reasons why I went towards ciders as far as sort of your beer substitute. One is because of my gluten issues, my gluten intolerance.
That's right. So you really can't have most beers.
Right. The second reason is, even if I could, before I found out I was gluten intolerant, I had a little bit of beer and that sort of thing. It does nothing for me. It's flavorless, and so especially your major brands.
Right.
So I like alcohol that's more flavorful, or you know, if I mix it with something or something of that nature. So when you look at ciders and sort of the growth of those over the last decade, really over the last decade, because when I started drinking them about a decade ago, you had basically a couple that were imported from Great Britain, from Ireland, maybe from Germany. You didn't have a lot of them that were made over here in the United States. But now you've got, I mean, how many of these? Angry Orchard is everywhere. One of the ones that I started to drink and that was really popular, starting to gain popularity back about a decade ago, is the Woodchuck brand.
Right.
You've got Cider Boys. You've got Crispin. You have now a couple of the ones that came over from Britain, Magners and Strongbow. Strongbow has branched out because their original cider, their original recipe is very dry. And that's another thing about ciders. You can have them really dry, more like a champagne.
Right.
Or you can have them a little bit fruity or flavorful, like Angry Orchard, like some of these Cider Boys. And you usually associate ciders with just apples. They have the apple flavor. But there are a lot of them that will do different, a lot of these companies, and Ace is another one that I left out, unfortunately. They'll do a whole bunch of different flavors. They'll do pear. Pear is probably after apple. Pear is the next most popular cider.
That sounds like that would be so good.
Oh, yeah. Most of the pear ciders are fantastic.
I mean, you know, I was at this event that the WCCO TV sponsored today, and it was at the banks of the Mississippi River, and it was really hot out.
Yes.
And we did this pull, and I was just kind of getting like, you know, I was drinking a lot of water or whatever, and there were, you know, some beer tents. I mean, people were like, I was grabbing beers, and as I said, I'm not a big beer person, but it just seemed like it would be so heavy. You know, even if I could have and even if I wasn't working, I just don't think I would have gone there. But I think if there had been a pear cider, that just sounds so like a sparkly pear cider. That sounds really good,
they,
you know.
They do pear. There.
I did not know that.
There are blackberry, strawberry. You can do – I know
– Really?
When you get into the fall season, they'll do pumpkin ciders. They will.
I mean, I've had sweet, one. Sweet raspberry.
Raspberry, cherry. Basically, if you have a fruit that has a tartness or a sweetness to it, you could really, I think this could go for any sort of fruit, a citrus fruit as well. Yeah. You can ferment it. It's all just about fermenting that flavor and then making it into an alcohol. But it's amazing what they've done and the explosion of these, all of these different companies that are American companies, mind you, over the last decade, where all of these different tastes and flavors come out, and a lot of these local breweries. Loon Juice is a Minnesota cider company.
I'll have to look into that and maybe do a segment on ciders. It sounds really delicious, you know.
Hey, it really does. As long as I am there.
So we have samples.
Okay. Just bring me in.
Maybe we would have to like flip it to the – oh, no, because you leave at 8 o'clock, but okay. Fair enough.
Just let me know the day. I'll stay late. I don't care. I'll come in. Take off time from my other job. I will say this. I am not a gourmet. I am a glutton.
All right. Okay. Very good. Well, okay. Well, that is certainly a sales pitch for all kinds of ciders. Well, then we do have to take a break. I do want to let you know we have much more ahead here on this Saturday night. Coming up after the break and after weather, and we do want to hear the weather from my friend, I believe it's Molly Rosenblatt, who was in the river today at Pulling Together. In the river. I posted the picture on my Twitter feed. Coming up in the next half hour, we will visit with Cheryl Hill, who I've known for quite some time. Tragically, her 16-year-old son passed away on a youth trip in Japan. The group knew he was diabetic. He needed medical help. They didn't give it to him, and he passed away. And Cheryl really has devoted her life ever since to getting out information about traveling smart. And she just has this new website out called Depart Smart. And I think it was just last week, Jonathan, that we were sitting here with the reports of that terrorist attack in London, and just, you know, it, where did they hit? They hit a tourist attraction, you know, at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night when, you know, people are out, you know, having fun and enjoying themselves. So there's that to worry about. There's, you know, medical issues to worry about. What happens if you get sick? Do you know? Cheryl Hill will argue that you should be getting certain kinds of insurance, even though it's quite expensive. Anyway, she's got this website, and she really does have an amazing amount of information that you can access free of charge. So we're going to visit with her after this break. But first, let's break and get some weather, and then we'll come back with Cheryl Hill.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is 7:38 in the Twin Cities. Jonathan Lowe and I still talking cider in the breaks here, but we are going to shift gears here. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Well, I was just chatting with Jonathan. I think I mentioned it on the air just a week ago here on this show. We were taking breaks or taking updates from CBS News every 20 minutes about the developing story out of London of a terrorist attack, yet another terrorist attack at a popular tourist destination. And it certainly raises the specter of the problems and what can happen overseas. I mean, it's a scary world out there. There are a lot of other issues that can happen. For instance, what happens if you get sick? All of those issues. My next guest is somebody, as I said, who I've known for quite some time now. She lost her 16-year-old son, Tyler, back a decade ago. He was on a youth trip. The trip leaders, it was a trip to Japan, knew that he had diabetes. He became ill. He asked for help, and they didn't provide it immediately. And tragically, Tyler, who's a standout athlete and a healthy, otherwise healthy young man, passed away. And since then, Cheryl Hill really has devoted her life, she and her husband, to getting the word out about what people should know when they travel overseas. And the reason I think this is so important is that I think, you know, and Cheryl's got the statistics, so many people are traveling overseas, so many young people, so many students are traveling overseas. The numbers grow every year. And Cheryl Hill has just unveiled a new website called Depart Smart that has all this information, a quiz, you can have downloads of pamphlets and all these things that you know, you can either do for your family if you're traveling, if a loved one is traveling. And it really has enormous insight for everyone. So, Cheryl, thank you so much for coming to the program. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Esme. Thanks.
Okay, well, absolutely. And I had you on WCCO-TV on our Sunday morning show to give you a plug. I really do think this is so important. And, you know, it sounds like you're getting a lot of downloads and people wanting to know, you know, what should they know?
Oh, you've been a great champion for us. We had the St. Cloud State University Confucius Institute call us and say that they love the idea of a standardized safe travel. We like to call them travel heroes who can identify and avoid risk at help and home. Most people don't know how, and mostly because the travel and tourism industry of, you know, airline transfers is really only my generation old.
Right.
Policy just hasn't kept pace.
And you know, you've got, I mean, there's some amazing numbers of how many people travel overseas and how many people travel alone and how many kids travel. I mean, kids, I mean, I'm talking about mostly college age kids, but some younger, some a little older.
Well, actually, students as young as elementary and middle school are now being encouraged into these abroad programs. And I'm a host mom of 8 kids for 12 years, so I know how transformative that can be. At the same time, when Tyler died, the hardest moment of my life, I look back and I think, why didn't anyone tell me? And we published TylerHill.org to try to warn others. And his story kept repeating again and again. And it's really a simple top 10 questions that we've learned over 10 years that we asked people, what do you know now that you didn't know then that would have changed that outcome? In Tyler's case, the answers are so simple and so tragic. He tried to dial 911. It should have been 119. The Japanese hospital was minutes away.
So in other words, when you travel overseas and you're going to a specific country, you need to know what the equivalent number is of 911.
and how to ask for help. And shockingly, in some countries, the number is different for ambulance, fire, and police.
But you need to know that before you go.
You do need to know that, yes. I think the other thing that we've learned through this hardest school of a parent could ever go through is that every American, before they book that airplane ticket, the travel and tourism industry is the only industry that doesn't have to give you a warning before you make a purchase. And the State Department puts out warnings and alerts and specific location alerts to help you depart smart for the world and make informed decisions. They specifically put a warning out when they are advising you to consider not traveling to a country at all. And you can find that information at travel.state.gov.
Another thing you like to talk about, too, is the kinds of insurance. And this is something that I don't think people think of. Tell us about that.
I think that that what shocked me recently, in 2014, the Department of Commerce International Trade Association put out a report that cited 30 million Americans go abroad. Of those, about half travel alone, and it's 50-50 male and female, and 2 million of those are students. And out of all of those citizens, 9 out of 10 do not protect themselves with vaccinations or travel insurance. And the travel insurance can rip the soul out of your life.
Okay. When you first told me about this, I thought, first of all, the vaccination thing, really, that's kind of shocking. But when you talked about travel insurance, I thought what you were talking about is that if I'm planning to go on a cruise with my family, I take out insurance in case one of us gets sick and we can't go. That's not what you're talking about.
No, that type of insurance is trip insurance. There's some soft edges around that, but trip insurance protects your purchase. So if there's a monsoon and you can't fly, you'll get your airplane ticket back. If you become ill or there's an emergency at home, you'll get your trip costs back. Travel insurance protects you. You get a 24/7 hotline with an interpreter, referrals to the best care nearest you, prepay. In some countries, you have to pay before you receive services. And most importantly, if you need to be medically evacuated, or in the case of my son, Tyler, we needed to bring his casket home, it can cost $30,000 to $300,000 to get you to appropriate care or home when tragedy happens. And sometimes people have to sell their homes to make that occur. But that's travel insurance is maybe 5%, 10% of your total trip costs, and no one should leave home without it.
Right. And I do think that this is, you know, extremely common. When you were in our studio for the TV interview, you know, I mentioned to our first guest, Professor Larry Jacobs, I don't think he'll mind saying this because he, you know, came right out with it, is that a few years ago he had a student or a daughter who's college age who was in Mongolia and got dysentery. And they were just panicked because this is a remote country and they were facing all kinds of, you know, things. And the hospital care was just completely substandard compared to American standards. And they didn't have this. And it was very difficult. And thank goodness their child, you know, recovered. But it's something to think about, that the standard of care is very different in these other countries and that you do need to know how to ask for it and also what the cost might be as an American. Some of these systems are socialized medicine, but if you're not, a native of that country, what does that mean for the cost to you? And all of those things.
Some countries can refuse you care. In Greece, you have to show proof of insurance before you're going to get care. So just because it's a socialist country doesn't mean that because you're an alien from the United States that you're going to fall under that umbrella. That's not true in every country. But that's why it's so important to depart smart. And that's the solution we're building right now is so exciting. And I want to thank you, Esme, because of your featuring Depart Smart on your show. The Philadelphia International Airport is featuring our travel safety checklist in their safety fair on June 22nd.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough.
Well, I don't know how I get credit for that. I think your website, and again, it's just departsmart.org, folks. Just go look at it if you're thinking of traveling, because I do think Cheryl, obviously, and I so admire people who have to somehow deal with an unfathomable tragedy like yours and somehow use that for good. And I just think people in this day and age really need to think about what they're doing when they travel.
which is why I'm so excited about our solution, and we're reaching out to the travel and tourism industry to share in our success. Right now, we're calling on sponsors in the travel insurance, ticketing, insurance, health clinics to help us build the first consumer-driven travel safety certification. In our first course, which should be available by August 1, we're going to help you build an action plan so you can get help at home.
Right. And this is also for maybe you've got the 18-year-old or the 16-year-old or, you know, 22-year-old who's going to spend, you know, a semester in Beijing, you know, or any place.
You know, and to that point, as a parent, no one told me that the validity rule required that I had to have a passport good for 6 months beyond Tyler's return. My passport was only good for 3. And I was almost refused access to go get to him in the worst moment of my life. You also need a
passport. You mean because your passport was about to expire?
You have the validity rule in many countries requires that your passport is good for 6 months beyond the date of return.
Ooh. I've never
Mine
heard
was
that.
Only 3 months old. And that's why our work is so important. I like to tell people that I choose to honor my son's life by sharing the news so that it doesn't happen again. His story does not repeat. And it is such a reward to know that although I couldn't help Tyler, I've helped hundreds of people, and I hope to help millions.
Okay. What would you advise people about the terror threats? And obviously, we've had terrorist incidents here in this country, but certainly they do seem to be more prevalent in Europe, which is obviously a very popular destination and a fabulous place to visit.
Do you know what I would say is that, you know, if you compare London to third world countries, they get the bad guys. And they're on it, and they know where the threats are. And it's probably, you know, they're on hyper alert. What I would advise people is from the U.S. Department of State to go to travel.state.gov, read the country-specific warnings, register your trip in the Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, step.state.gov.
And that's with the State Department.
Yes, and so, the OSAC, Overseas Security Advisory Council, puts out a crime and safety report by country. You could search OSAC Crime and Safety Report United Kingdom, and it will tell you what the terrorist threat is. Is it critical, high, medium, or low? There is a 10-point quiz on our website. At the end of that quiz, you can download a travel safety checklist that has more than 50 touch points to help you and the ones you love.
Well, what happens, Cheryl, if you register your trip? Let's say I'm going to go to Austria, and I register that I, you know, with the State Department, that I am going to go to Austria. What advantage does that give me?
I think there are several of them. Number one, if I always register. It is a behavior that I have changed since I've become wiser. I was once in Scotland when I received an alert that Osama bin Laden was killed, and not to celebrate, not to attract attention, and if I wanted to get home, they would help me do that. Another time I was in Australia, and they warned me that London was having riots, and could they reroute me through Amsterdam? Another time...
So these were text alerts?
Yes.
All because you signed up. Okay. All right.
Right. Your emergency contacts can follow your trip and get the same alerts. They can also alert you when something happens at home while you're overseas.
All right.
So, you know, this is your tax dollars at work. We should take advantage of that.
Okay. And that's something separate with the State Department. But you have all this on your website, which, again, is departsmart.org.
Yes.
Well, listen, Cheryl, once again, just great information. I just think anybody who's traveling or has a loved one that's traveling really should check out your website because you're the only one who seems to be doing it.
And it's true. We're the only nonprofit in the world that's assisting the travel and tourism, poor travel and tourism consumer safety. And we do need support. So if you're feeling the love on the work that we do, please contribute and help us bring this course to life.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much, Cheryl, and take care.
Yes, thanks for having me.
All right, folks, we do have to take a quick break. You're listening to News Radio 830 WCCO. It is 7:55 in the Twin Cities. Esme Murphy with you until 9 o'clock. Well, coming up, as usual, the awesome Professor David Schultz. And again, so much to talk about. It's just... talking in the break with Jonathan Lowe and Kevin Reed, our studio coordinators, just about how you feel every time you turn around these days, there's something new or somebody's having a news conference or there's some development. I mean, I said to Kevin, hey, no breaking news this Saturday night. He goes, hey, there's still time. I guess he's right. Well, we certainly hope for calmness here on this very humid and sticky Saturday night. So Folks, keep it right here. You are listening to News Radio 830. WCCO Professor David Schultz is next.